You trust me with this?
After 190 episodes, yes.
Okay.
Should I not?
It's the last story is going to end the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Hello, humans, and welcome to Audio Face. We're an irreverent podcast about music, news, and culture that mostly matters. I am Sean.
I'm Dan.
This is episode 190. We have a lot of music for y'all. So we have five singles, which we'll get to in a second. Don't worry about that. We have albums that, well...
We have three album reviews.
We have three album reviews, allegedly. We have The Juice Box by Emotional Oranges, which theme that I recommended from before, but we'll get to that in a little bit. You have Culture 3 by Migos, so you don't have to. And you have Jordy by Maroon 5, so you super don't have to. And
we have great reviews.
We got some spicy takes and everything, but we'll get to that in a second because we are on a professional podcast. We do things great, and let's jump in.
Yeah, well, let's start with the single Solar Power by Lorde. This is Lorde's return. This is Lorde's comeback.
Yeah, she has been basically dead silent since her second LP came out in 2017. Artists that we really enjoy, we really like Lorde's music. So it was interesting to hear her return with Solar Power, which the album cover is interesting, to say the least. It's basically Naked Mr. Krabs, so.
Yeah, with Plankton having the angle.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, it's a kind of slower acoustic song in the beginning. It has like a build sort of near the end, near the middle to the end. Yeah.
Blink three times when you feel it kicking in that sun.
And as a first sort of like pass at an upcoming album, I don't know if it's going to be called Solar Power or not. It's definitely really interesting.
I think the album is supposed to be called Solar Power.
Yeah. So this would be the title track. And it sounds like a good like title track, but I think a lot of people are falling into the easy trap where it's like, oh, this is what the lead single sounds like. I don't like it. Or this is like anything like that. I doubt that.
Yeah, there's no way because she's experimented so much with her two LPs. There's so many different sounds in there that it's not going to be a full acoustic album. There's no way. But
she's the kind of artist where like one sound is not really indicative of the whole project necessarily. She's always keep guessing. Yeah,
so. Exactly.
It's not even like the Lorde fan coming out of me saying that. It's just like a like
that's what
she's
does.
Just very different with things. So
and Solar Power is interesting. I think it's decent. I don't think it's necessarily anything great, but I have to listen to it a couple more times to really get into it, I guess. But it's nice to see her return and to have an album come out, and it's supposed to come out pretty relatively soon.
Yeah, sometime this summer, maybe early fall. I think it's understated, which I think like takes people very back because they're expecting like more like drums or some like larger thing to happen in it. But I think like it does like a pretty solid job for like what it's attempting to be like as a song essentially, and sort of like how minimal it is sort of like as a project.
Yeah.
So like that's definitely interesting. The song is featuring Clairo and Phoebe Bridgers in production. And kind of like some of the vocals, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
And Clairo is also came out with a new single this week, Blouse. That is also similarly very acoustic. So you can tell like where those sort of.
And I've never been a super big Clairo friend. I've found her music to be kind of boring, but decent, I guess.
Yeah.
And a lot of people like her music. Why do I tell you how I feel? Why when you're too busy looking down the blouse? Something I wouldn't say aloud. If touch could make them hear, then touch me now. Well, this is a decent track too. So yeah. Again, it's like Solar Power, like you said. Really stripped back acoustic, really going back to roots of that bedroom style indie and everything.
Yeah, so sort of somber story about like essentially being on the other end of the male gaze and attention around that. But it's like really soft, like acoustic track. I don't even like acoustic tracks that much, but I could tell it was really like thoughtfully produced and done there.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on, because this is just the MF Doom Memorial Tour podcast now.
Jesus Christ.
Dropout Boogie featuring, by Your Old Droog featuring MF Doom. Now, this is Your Old Droog and MF Doom's, I think, third song together, second or third.
Mm-hmm.
And so they, this is the first. So they've made a couple of songs together, but this is the first one of a couple of songs that they've made together. I remember it's like a really weird thing like that. But yeah, it sounds pretty close to like old school, almost like Uncle Rappy kind of thing, kind of sounds to me. All those years and now paying bookies and playing hooky. Never danced at the prom. I did the dropout boogie. I don't want to listen. I don't believe in this school system. And let me tell you, I'm 20 years old, and I know a lot. Understand? For my age, I know a lot. And where did I learn it? In the streets. Because the school couldn't do nothing for me. Stick with it, baby. Someday you might be king. Remain true to the task. Got bad grades, still stay doing the math. I
actually really like it, but I think it's a much better rendition of your old school hip hop sounds than when he did this Starface project.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Yeah. It sounds a lot better than a lot of other like Uncle Rap projects down there, and I think Your Old Droog does a good job of fitting his bars and keeping them newer and up to date while still fitting them in the place of like this old school sort of like cartoon samples sort of like hip hop music here. Still good. Still the same sort of like meh. This is sad opinion with Posthumous Doom releases, but there's that. Moving on,
you have Thought Shit, you know, by Meg the Stallion.
Yeah,
she's just rolling on around it.
Yeah. So Thought Shit is, I mean, it's pretty much exactly what you would expect from Meg the Stallion from a song called Thought Shit. Hands on my knees, drinking out the motherfucking bottle on my thigh shit. Everything I eat goes straight to my pockets. 2021, finna graduate college. Got the shit, I'm a real hot topic. Fucking on a nigga, make him sing on some pop shit. I need a real headbang on some rock shit. Pussy like crack when it hit it like Meg Thee Stallion does a similar thing to Nicki Minaj, whereas like she'll have alter ego sort of like characters and people. So like Tina Snow is, I guess, a more strippery or more thoughtier version of Megan Thee Stallion, which is like no disrespect, but I'm just like, okay. It's just like, I'm not sure where the delineation is, but sure, whatever. There's like a sort of stylistic thing. Still being said, like with the brass tacks and how it goes, Meg Thee Stallion's like rhymes and flows and things like that are really good and unmatched, not just for women, but like rap in general. It's kind of pathetic, honestly, especially more on that later. But she just
especially
really
for, like,
good
thought, thought Shit was really good because her album that came out last year, we thought there was some in there that was really good and there's some in there that we thought kind of was lackluster, so we wanted to expand a little bit more, but this track is pretty good.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it. It's as ratchet as you think it would be.
Yes. And lastly, we have White Walls by Goldlink. This is Goldlink's glorious return. We reviewed a couple of Goldlink albums on here, At What Cost in 2017 and Diaspora in 2019. Mm-hmm. There aren't a lot of albums on Audioface where we'll be able to get to say we've reviewed three of them, but we will when Goldlink releases the full album.
Let's see, how many three will we have done?
You keep thinking about that. I'll talk about White Walls.
Yeah.
White Walls kind of takes a sort of trappy-ish rendition, but a little bit slower down, kind of gritty thing. It definitely sounds different from At What Cost of Diaspora, which I really love. You have a Sheck West Disney, which is really funny. But like Goldlink, which is kind of a fear I had from Diaspora, and I'm not going to judge the album, which we'll be reviewing maybe next week if the podcast exists. But like I was worried that he could kind of get stuck into a flow and a sound, and it doesn't seem like that's exactly going to happen here. It seems like he has enough to be a little bit unique and different there, but we'll see more with the album. I like this. It sounds like really good. It's got a really nice grimy sort of flow, and it sounds like unique into hip hop and trap, and mixing trap and B in there as well. So I like that.
Yeah. So there's been a couple that we've done a lot of two albums.
Yeah, we've done a couple of two now.
We've done a bunch of two.
Those doubles are going to start happening more this year because mm-hmm. a lot of people, especially artists we like, are on cycles where
21 Savage, if you want to count the Metro Boomin album.
Without Warning?
Yeah, because of Without Warning. Because of Without Warning. Because Without Warning, I Am Greater Than I Was, and the last album that came out. That one's the only one that, off the top of my head, that we've definitely done three.
Yeah. Speaking of multiple, like, albums that we've done, we've both done Migos and Maroon 5 reviews before. And in fact,
I think this is the third Maroon 5.
This might be our
second. But I thought we did a third.
Right now, because I know we did Culture. It's funny. I think we did Maroon 5 and our Without Warning review actually in the same podcast. Yeah. I was looking around the episode and I actually got the Without Warning review. But we've reviewed. This will be reviewing multiple albums. So we've had a couple of passes and Blues. Tries at.
We've had a couple of passes and tries at.
These artists will be able to talk about them very shortly and give them, I think, a really smart sort of like opinion about both artists, again, because we've listened to them both times. I don't know if I've said that a lot now. Anyways, plugs. That's time for me to turn that part of my brain on. Check out the 2021 AF playlist that we have for Audio Phase on Spotify. So you can listen to all the cool songs in 2021, you know, as you're going out into open wet mouth kiss summer. You can have cool music and cool tunes and be like that cool person who knows what the cool music is. So check it out in the podcast or video description. And we have all the recent songs we've added there and we'll continue to add throughout the year. Bonus episodes. We have done some really great bonus episodes on Audio Phase recently, and we'll have some cool ones continuing in the future. But check out our Radiohead bonus that we did fairly recently over the Memorial Day weekend. It's like a two-part episode, really comprehensive. People really love that. We've also done Daft Punk, MF Doom, and the state of music in 2021 in general. All those episodes people really love. So check those out in the Audio Phase YouTube feed at youtube.com/audiophasepod or at the podcast feed by searching Audio Phase, any podcast app you listen to, whether it's Apple Podcast or Spotify or Stitcher or wherever. All those links, by the way, are at audioface.show. Audioface.show for all those links. And you can help grow Audio Phase by following us on Twitter and Instagram at Audio Phase Pod. Same handle, Audio Phase Pod on both. There's a new Power Report episode that I did with Sean and Caesar where we talk about a whole spattering of news. I got pretty pissed at the Democratic Party for a lot of different reasons, and I think there's justifiable reasons you should be too.
I had to give history lessons there.
Yeah, we had to give history lessons to painfully stupid politicians who are political pundits who get paid salaries that are ridiculous. It's a really good time. Check it out. It was a really fire episode. Powerreport.world for all of the relevant links for that. And thank you, Peter, for editing this monstrosity. DeadMusic666 on Instagram. Dead Music Productions is how this thing rolls. Let's move into the news and let's go with a little bit of audio face memory lane because we've been talking about this story for a while because this is one of the oldest stories in modern music.
De La Soul, their early music may finally be coming to streaming services. So a lot of their early work is not able to stream, so you can't get it on Spotify, Apple Music, whatever. So you have to go old school, you know, and get it from
the MP3s or the CDs.
If you can find those. Yeah, so...
And the reason being, if I can explain, like 15 seconds. Yeah. A lot of the samples that were used weren't necessarily fully cleared by De La Soul when they were released, which was common in like hip-hop and rap music at the time. But B, and this is the 5-second explanation, their label at the time did a lot of fuck shit with their music.
Yep.
Layers and layers of it.
Yeah. There's a lot of shit in there. But anyway,
we've talked about it in previous episodes of Audio Phase. There's even a Teen Titans episode that's vaguely about De La Soul going through the same experience.
Yeah.
But basically, back in 2019, I think it was a couple years ago where their record label that had the most problems with Tommy Boy Records was acquired by a larger company. And so there was some hopes that De La Soul with that larger company would be able to work out some better deals. And it's looking like things are moving in a positive direction, not fully complete, but at least it's like a positive direction. So De La Soul is hoping that with Reservoir, they'll be able to get more than just like 10% of the streaming revenue. They'll obviously get like a substantial amount of it, a fair amount of it at least. Fair in the you know, relative sense of what's happening with streaming and other artists right now, and that we'll be able to get that music on streaming services and add it to playlists and go through those reminiscing times again.
That's the idea of it.
Yeah, to get to relive those moments.
So the late Sophie, her brother says that he has hundreds of unreleased songs, including an album of a bunch of her work, which is crazy to see. That hundreds of songs is insane. We both really enjoy Sophie Dan a lot. I've started to appreciate her music more and more. And then her,
she was an hyper pop electronic music artist who passed away suddenly earlier this year.
Yeah, it was like really tragic. But this kind of goes into our conversation of like posthumous releases and everything, because we've had a couple this year already. So, but apparently the her brother, he has possessions of rough sketches to nearly complete songs.
Yeah, things and ranging from things, some things are really rough, some things are like it's done.
Completely done, exactly. So I don't know if he's going to release it or anything, but so he says that the most important thing for us is doing right by Sophie, putting stuff out that Sophie was happy with and would want to be out.
Yeah.
And that's the thing of our like other conversations that we've had on Audioface about posthumous releases, posthumous albums, is it's, you get that tricky situation of some people don't have rights, or some people have it that don't have the best motivations for the artist at heart. And but with this, it's like it's her brother. So you can kind of have that family ties and everything, and you have a little bit closer relationship with it.
Not just family ties like with the artist, but a lot of times the family comes in after the artist unfortunately passed. And then, or even like with Juice WRLD and like another artist, more on this later. But like, you know, the family isn't necessarily closest to the artist musically. So their understanding of what they want to do isn't necessarily that close. Mm-hmm. I think Lil Peep is another good example. Mac Miller might be an example. Mm-hmm. However, you have the situation where they're a lot closer, and he was a lot closer in the music making process while she was alive. So you have that there. So we could get another Sophie album potentially. And unlike a lot of posthumous releases, again, super more on this later because I want to get to this later, but these won't suck, right? Like, these will actually do the artist justice.
Yes.
And Sophie deserves, like, more than a lot of posthumous artists to be done the most justice in any, like, future work that is made under her name.
For sure. Moving on to our first review, we have The Juice Box by Emotional Oranges. It is 8 songs, 24 minutes long. Emotional Oranges are hip-hop R&B duo, but they have other people working along with them. Based in L.A., the lead vocalist, she's the vocal coach of Adele, and the male vocalist, he's the one of the producers for Drake. So they met together at a bat mitzvah, hilarious, in 2017, and then realized that like they just started collaborating together and wanted to be kind of relatively unknown, more or less. So they only go by like their letters of their names and stuff. So that way they want to live a normal life but make good music, because they see the spotlight of all the artists they work with and like, fuck that shit. And they make fantastic music. We've brought them up in different Audioface episodes. Caesar is actually the one who showed me them first from the We Made It podcast, friend
and
of Power
Report,
and Power Report. So this is their third, I would say, drop-ish, probably. It's like that in-between-ish, almost.
Yeah, and there was the Juice Volume 1 and 2.
Yeah, Juice Volume 1, fantastic. Really, really good. Volume 2 is good, but I think Volume 1 outshines Volume 2 a lot more. But
It'll be interesting. I'll maybe come back to why that is later. But with this, we've gotten a little bit of a taste of what this would sound like from previous releases and singles that had come out. We had definitely heard all that with Channel Trace a little bit earlier, because Channel Trace just kind of been on like a run.
Yeah.
He came out with an album actually in Audioface Dead period in like late December. So we should actually go back and review that at some point.
Okay.
But he, that's where like the album starts off with all that. It's a pretty like nice mix for both Emotional Oranges.
It does sound like an Emotional Oranges track, like just by the production and everything. I'm like, this is solid. These sounds like them. Come on and just bounce. I take that. What you gonna do with all that? Tell your homeboy to fall back. Tell your girlfriend to fall back. Come on and just look, I need that. Took one look, I need that. The way you shaking got me feeling kinda savage, girl. You know what I'm into. I'm a geek and a freak in the sheets. Only say it once, so I don't have to repeat. It's not the ride, better take front seat. But it's a good thing because I like them with all of the features on this album. You have every track has a feature. So the first one is Chanel Tress. You have Big Pig, Child. You have Becky G, Vince Staples, They, Yandere, and Kiana Lede. And yeah, all of these artists complement each other well. They like mix it fantastic. So that way everything fits, but then still fits within a more emotional oranges, like within their own sound and everything too.
Because like, for example, I kind of get, especially with Emotional Oranges sound, more on that in a bit. Especially with Chanel Tress, a lot of the songs he's worked with, he blends really well with Emotional Oranges so well. So like, I'm thinking of a song, Recap, that Chanel Tress did with Kido and Van Jess that we reviewed earlier this year that has a kind of similar vibe to it, but Emotional Oranges' spin on it is very much their own. It's a lot bassier. It's a lot heavier and grittier the way they recorded it. It's got like a lot more like intonation with what they're doing. I'm definitely like that with their sound. And yeah, every person on the record, they fit so nicely with what Emotional Oranges are doing. It just feels complimentary.
Yeah, and the thing with them too is that they're expanding on their sound too, because before they were kind of like experimenting here or there, but then that was my issue with Volume 1 and Volume 2. Volume 2 kind of just a little bit more off of Volume 1, so that's why I felt a little bit more stagnated compared to, Volume 2 compared to Volume 1. And with this, because now they're going out with different artists, now they're really getting into that R&B sound, and it's just fantastic, because out of a genre that is pretty crowded and there's a lot of different good and bad in the in this space.
R&B neo-pop space,
exactly, there's a lot in there. This is still, they still make really, really good tracks. Example, Black Body and Soul, right after all that, it's like solid right into that chill funk beats, and you just get in there, you want to dance and groove. The nice thing I like too is every track is pretty short. They're all like, the longest track is the Back and Forth of Vince Staples. It's only 3 minutes, 22 seconds. So that was my issue with some of the neo-pop stuff we've heard earlier this year, is that sometimes they can really drag on, or the tracks can get a little bit long. And with a beat that's, you know, either like oversimplified, or so that
yeah, it's just, fairly repetitive.
Exactly, gets a bit too repetitive after a while.
Yeah, I think that's like a remnant of previous R&B. The songs would be like slower and like 4 minutes long because like Usher was letting it burn somewhere, right? Like that was used to be kind of like the thing, but now songs are like shorter. And as you were mentioning in like the preamble of this review, these people really know like song production, music production down to a science. They're like, let's keep these things 3 minutes or less. Let's get like right to the point, hook right, like hook, line, and sinker, in the sense that the hook is very much the beginning of the song.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
Get the idea, because you like that sound. These are really good sounds and grooves the way you've got, and you move into it. You get songs like Bonafide, Down to Miami with Child and Becky G. Becky G, we've also done as a lot of like features here and there, as a Latin artist. Different locations, save your ticket to Miami, I got plenty destinations. Kelly really nice.
It's really
and good. Fits really well into the song.
It fits fantastic. Like the Latin vibes in Down to Miami is fantastic. I love how it's Spanglish, so it's hilarious. But it fits really, really well with mixing up that almost like trap-ish sound with neo-pop and everything that can be overdone as well, but they put a different spin on it, adding a little bit of Latin flair and a bunch of other things into it, but combining it to make it their own piece and to sit well within the
I'd say Down in Miami might be like one of my favorite songs on the album because of all that it accomplishes at once, really. Because like it takes a lot of genres, like you're saying, that could be very bland on their own. We've had complaints where, as we're reviewing more Latin music, it seems like it gets stuck in this.
Oh no, it's just reggaeton, and they end up doing the same beat over and over again, just like how
just like how American does trap.
Yeah, exactly. It can get like that, which can get annoying.
But you don't get that here. You just get nice little flavors and hits of all these little things in a way that doesn't like over pollute all of it.
Yeah.
My complaint with the album is that like Emotional Oranges, it's a trap a lot of bands get into. They have a sound, and when you're listening to a lot of those songs in succession, you get very like trapped in that sound, and you want something to seem a little bit different. Like you want them to try, like, it seems like, and it fits together cohesively as a drop, in the sense that it feels like they all these songs come from similar sessions and they got together with the same mm-hmm. instruments. But it's like, let's change some of the instruments around. Let's change some settings on the instruments. Let's just make some of these songs still sound cohesive, but explore them out individually a little bit more.
Yeah, I agree in that way too. I think the interesting thing is a lot of the people that work, that they have work with them, so their guitarist is a teacher. Their co-producer, along with the male guy, he's a coder by day. So it's like these people all have their own day jobs and all other thing, and then they come by and this is their audio face. This is their side project and stuff. Yeah. And it's fucking great and so much better than all these other artists that come out and do this as like their whole trade and everything in their life.
Yeah, it is kind of amazing.
It's crazy. Like this is their side thing in a way.
Yeah.
And that's how good they are. Even like with Back and Forth with Vince Staples, I could get to that point too where I really liked it. I liked the little bit quicker beat and everything. I think Vince's part was A little underwhelming and understated. I wanted a little bit more from his part, but I think that's probably stylistic choices from Emotional Oranges.
Yeah, and a note about Vince Staples. Like, he's a good artist, and, like, we like him a lot. But, like, our criticism of him as well is that, like, in moments where he sort of has to branch out from what he's doing, he hasn't seemed like he has, like, the strongest foundation out there yet. I'm really excited to see. He's apparently got an album or two coming out within the next year or so.
Please.
And he'll be exploring that. Apparently, the albums are going to be, like, more introspective into himself as a person. This, like, shell mysterious. So
I'm down.
Hopefully, he'll get a little bit more exercise with those things. And this is pretty good right here. Vince Staples manages to, like, be, you know, self-referential and understanding that, like, he doesn't want to sound like another even like love song on this. Like, that's really good. I like that. It just feels like he can do a little bit more with this, like, practice.
Yeah, he just has to get more confident in it, more or less.
Whereas they, on the next track on Lock It Up, they've done so many of these trap and beat style songs, R&B style songs, neo-pop style songs.
They just knock it out of the park.
They kill it, and they feel like part of Emotional Oranges.
You got me feeling all kind of ways. I love your body, I can spot it from a mile away. I was thinking me and you could take a holiday. We getting freaky in Tulum, Mandalay, Mandalay. You know what you do to me. I'm not who I used to be. It should be you and me, you and me.
Like, Emotional Oranges and they could be a super group together.
Oh,
they could kill it.
Yeah, exactly. And I really like Lock It Up. That's probably my favorite on the album because this is like my top of the neo-pop trap and beat genre to me. This is like what you get if you really mix it up. And it's just fantastic. Last two tracks, No Words and Give Me Up, also pretty good. But those ones were felt like a little understated to me compared to the rest of the album, but they're still quite good as well.
Yeah.
Now, going back to your previous scene, I do want them to branch out a little bit more, try different things, but they are slowly changing it up as well, like compared to their first two works, Volume 1 and Volume 2, that they are getting better, they are improving, so it's a slow process with it, so I'm confident that they will keep improving. I'm glad that what they did with this project, that it's short, it's crisp, and gets to the point, because everything is cohesive, it's great, all the features match up perfectly, which is very, very hard to do, especially with all of the star power that is in this album, but it's good. I like this record a lot.
Artists, ask your label if a drop is right for you, honestly, because like having a structure where you don't have to like fill out an album, you're not getting a bunch of filler.
You're not getting a bunch of filler where you're just like, literally, legally, I have to put this in here.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily
a song.
It's
like, I'm just trying to push up to 40, 45 minutes.
Because I need to do this. When you don't have, if you don't have it there, they're not really pressured to do that. They're like, we just like making this shit for fun.
Yeah, it's great.
And it's really damn good.
Yeah. Arbitrary scale. We do arbitrary scales on Audio Face because every other music publication does like a regular scale. They put so much effort into doing this regular scale, and then every single week they butcher it. Butcher, and that's a new word. They botch it so badly, and don't even really tie to the actual meaning of that scale. So we just give up to begin with. We pick a new scale every week, and the scale doesn't really make sense on what's better and what's not or worse. We just go into it.
And we just make some random shit because it doesn't matter.
This week, it is poisonous chemicals that are no longer allowed to be used when you build. There's a whole list of things from, you know, asbestos to PVC to hydrochlorofluorocarbons. Shout out Australia. So we can get all in there.
I'm saying this is a solid lead to your paint. Because, like, added lead to your paint just makes it so much better, right? Like lead paint just, it just, they don't make it like that anymore, dog. Like you put that on a house, it's just, it's good.
When you're huffing lead paint, it just hits different.
Exactly, you know?
Just like you 10 years later when you are apparently more likely to be violent because of what lead does.
You get that young King Henry VIII lead poisoning.
Yeah, I'm going to do, here's a fun audio face one. I don't even know how to pronounce this. Please undo, because that's a, yeah. Phthalates? Phthalates? I'm not sure what that word is. Phthalates? But that sounds like it's...
Not a lot of... Phthalates.
I'm not sure what it is, but it sounds pretty dangerous. Let's Google it right now. It's a group of chemicals. They're called plasticizers, and they make plastics more durable.
You know, I know plasticizer, yeah, because they make your... You can make it for not being so rigid.
Yeah. You can use some of them, and sometimes they're hair products instead of shampoos and vinyl flooring. Yes. But you want to be.
That's why
a
you want organic.
That.
That's why you want organic hairspray and organic soaps and stuff because of the stuff they put in there to make it less rigid.
Yes.
Because of the bottles and stuff.
So. Yes, we teach a lot on AudioFace actually. I mean, just not just music. It's culture. It's lifestyle. It's wellness.
Culture.
God. Moving on, before we get into the main festivities.
That's a good way to put it.
Sony Music has launched this new Artist Forward campaign, and a lot of it is similar to Spotify's like attempts at transparency that they've done over the past couple weeks we've talked about, which is in response to criticisms that we think are fairly justified, that Spotify, Apple Music, and the streaming giants more broadly, along with the music industry and the labels, mm-hmm. are not doing their part in making sure artists get paid the right amount. But Sony, which is one of the major record labels, is coming out with an Artist Forward campaign. I'll mention the media stuff, like the good part about this, and I'll go into the rest of it, which sounds like corporate Pete Buttigieg gobbledygook speak. But like the main part of it, which is kind of interesting, I'll get to my dumb name for it later. But one of the main part is called the Legacy Unrecouped Balance Program, which basically says that... if you are an artist and you signed with Sony at any point prior to the year 2000 and you never received an advance from Sony afterwards, but you didn't really like break even on any of your music, for example, like it just like they had a contract for you, they gave you an advance, it didn't go well, like whatever. Sony's basically wiping it clean. You no longer have any debts or anything you have to pay for backwards.
Thanks.
Any unrecouped balances you had before that date, if you like fall under that contract, they're done. It's being forgiven. It's like a debt forgiveness, sort of like a Catholic debt jubilee kind of thing. So I think that's really good for artists who are like, at this point, definitely out of the stage where they would be able to like restart their career again. You're talking about people who are probably in their like 40s, 50s, 60s or so, who might just be in dumb situations because of these arcane contracts. That would provide them a little bit of solace. And then there are some other parts of this campaign.
It's just so vague and don't really say anything. There's no substance in it.
One's like instant account advances or like cash out feature, which sounds less like a record label and more like Venmo.
It sounds like Capital One. You can get cash out if you sign up for this card right now.
100,000 bonus points if you sign up this year. It's just like the record label is going to get you your money faster. It's like what I don't. To me, it seems more like a bunch of, on at least cursory glance, maybe it could be more like important or groundbreaking. But to me, it seems like, hey, while people are talking about record labels and artists, let's get a good positive PR story about Sony out in front, because maybe some negative PR stories will be coming out soon. Because it doesn't seem like there's a lot substantive besides what we had mentioned earlier here, where it really like helps artists or helps the streaming math in any way that's like substantive or matters. Yeah. And moving on to quick hits.
Quick hits. So Willow Smith, she recalls being bullied for listening to My Chemical Romance and Paramore. She says, quote, there's a lot of, hey, you're black, you're not supposed to listen to that.
I get it.
Which,
I get it. Willow Smith was in a
lot different to Will Smith. Willow Smith.
Yes, Willow Smith. In V Magazine was kind of talking about... she talks about commiserating with the former frontwoman of the metal band Straight Line Stitch, Alexis White, who was black, about being a black woman in the rock scene and about how like there are a lot of difficulties with that, you can imagine, because there's like not only, which I think a lot of people will understand, like there's, or understand at least sort of realize and appreciate that there's racism that comes towards you for being a black person or a black woman in a lot of different cases. But in music, you get this interesting sort of space where even like black people in music will be like, what are you doing? You don't belong there. Come with Usher and do some R&B or come do some rap or something like that. It's like a double sort of like, you don't feel like black enough for the black people, yeah, or like even enough for the white people to even like come and fit in. So yeah, it's like a double sort of unique entendre thing. And specifically with like the liking bands like My Chemical Romance and Paramore, like being a black emo person was like
it's kind of a weird thing.
Like, yeah. So like being into some of these things passively in college, like middle and high school.
You also just said LOL, which
like this is me responding to my own thoughts in my brain. We can go down a meta path. This is not that podcast.
Middle school Dan coming out real quick.
No, it'd be like Raffle XD if it were middle school Dan.
God.
But like,
no, please.
I think it's like important, Willow Smith's kind of speaking up about these things, because you even have, I was randomly listening to an old interview, not old, but a couple months old, interview that Marc Maron did with Thundercat, and Thundercat's talking about like, yeah being black and growing up watching anime, like you're a nerd, you're weird.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. The other people who watch anime are like not into black people often sometimes, and then other black people like anime, what the fuck is that? So it just is like an extra ostracizing.
You have no idea
thing.
Where you're supposed to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, people have grown up in these things, and now you have like RDC World and Thundercat and Willow Smith who are doing like great things with their art. So take that. What am I doing? I'm making political videos, so I guess it all washes out in the end. And I usually...
This almost could have been a No Chill Island.
That's how I do. How I do quick hits that are like...
This makes me angry. This makes me angry because I fucking hate Weezer.
Yeah, so Weezer is...
God, they're...
I should have titled the story Desperation Weezer, because their Van Weezer album, no one really cared about it. Like, everyone kind of knew what it was doing. Of course it was bad, but like, of course it was going to be bad. So I barely even made attention. Like, people, like... I mean, I'm surprised that other musical outlets that do reviews even gave it reviews or whatever, because apparently Pitchfork gave it a review, and they didn't like Rivers Cuomo and the Boys' latest... cover project, whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
And so Rivers Cuomo responds by doing, what year is this, 2003? A diss record against Pitchfork. Again, like, what year is it? Pitchfork diss songs are just so old, dude. Like, what are we doing now?
Wait. Holy hell, Weezer actually did a full diss song to Pitchfork.
Yeah.
Have we already nominated for the Naughty Little Bitch, or have we not?
No, but Sean, take it away.
You're nominated for the Don't a Little Bitch Award, Weezer, because your album is so fucking trash. It is horrible.
Your
music.
Albums, your recently like repertoire.
For the past 12, 13 years have all been heaps and piles of added shit. Or my favorite analogy, cat shit wrapped up in dog shit, are pretty much your albums. And you're going to try and do a diss on somebody trying to call you out for that because you're wearing long hair when you're in your 50s and you're not, if your name isn't Tom York or Willie Nelson and you're a white dude, you can't do that.
Here's the thing, Weezer, you can't simultaneously say, look, we're not going to do all of the heady, big, conceptual albums that you'd expect a mature rock band to do. We're going to do some fun projects because, you know, we're regular people and like we're dads and we want to do some fun, goofy things. Totally fine. God bless. That's the bed you've made, Weezer. Now fucking lay in it before you die. Because that's the thing, that's the issue here, is that like they want to have their, oh, I'm being fun and stupid. And they also want to have like A-plus reviews and say like,
you're not gonna do that.
They're fun, stupid, like, I restrained myself because we're not in No Chill Island yet. My fun, stupid, like weekend project with me and the hipster boys isn't being like given full 10 out of 10 Grammy awards. Us fucking around isn't art. Why don't people love us just screwing around? It's so entitled.
They've never grown up. They've never, it's just, you know those, okay, you know those teachers, right? You know those high school teachers that are maybe in their late 50s, early 60s that dress like they're 21 and you're like, that's not flattering on you at all, but they try to rock it and they can't rock it. That's what Weezer is.
Yeah. Oh, Pitchfork gave Van Weezer a hot 5.9.
Damn, I'm surprised it's that high. I would have got the solid 2.
And you can tell Rivers Cuomo is like trying extra hard to be like, the bad boy that his wife wishes she was fucking, when he says, and I quote, "This is a message that my manager wouldn't approve. After the song, he'll have a lot of cleaning up to do. Don't be influenced by an office full of dorks. I won't mention any names." And then the Weezer frontman coughs twice. Pitchfork. Yo,
can we verbally assault them on Twitter so they quit Twitter now?
This is like a 6-year-old Yo Mama joke as a song written by 45-year-olds.
Jesus Christ, I feel bad for the kids. God damn. Their kids are going to get bullied hard. You know, I want your kids to get bullied just so that way you have to see the repercussions of it and then realize your mistakes and your kids resent you later in life. And your kids end up being very, very successful, but then they end up hating you and then you live a lonely existence for the rest of your life and then dwindle in sadness.
Your kids turn that hatred of you into art and they become really great comedians.
There you go.
And if you thought that was towing the line of what's offensive and what's not, then I welcome you, new Audioface fans and old, to the 18th installment of No Chill Island.
That was the warm-up. You know, we did... All right, that was our skate race. So we got on the rink. They had the horn blow. We did skates around. Now it's face-off time.
I was just masturbating on the Zamboni for 3 minutes. Now we're really going to get into the match. I'm really going to get into the match. Audioface is a show about morals, and No Chill Island is a segment on Audioface that we've done for a really long time that really tests the morality of ourselves, the people listening, people who are listening to this in the future, all that stuff. There's a simple rule in Audioface on No Chill Island. The first one to get bleeped loses, but once you get bleeped, then it's like not really a competition anymore.
And then there's just a lot of editing for Peter, and I'm sorry.
Peter and me, I still have to edit this.
Peter and me, that's right. You and Peter.
Yeah, and there's a time constraint for logistical reasons I won't mention on the podcast, but like we got to get this done really quickly. So let's get into it. We got a lot of ridiculous stories, and this is a special No Chill Island because we've got two albums to review in the No Chill Island. So let's jump right into the sauce, shall we? We begin in Miami, Florida, where Pooh Shiesty is facing potentially 20 years over a nightclub shooting.
This is fucking beautiful. So apparently he was going out of a nightclub, had like a shit ton of money that dropped out of his pants, and then gunfire.
That's
more or less.
What happened was, you see, that's supposedly the story where he's charged with, well, Pooh Shiesty being charged with aggregate
battery. He shot a security guard.
Because security guard was shot in the ankle once. Damn, the dude, money fell out.
Shot the
allegedly.
Ankle.
Now, Florida is a particularly punitive state. There are a lot of rappers as of late who have like gotten done in the clink. I think there was one artist who, like, him and his brother were pulled over by police in Miami over the weekend. And I'm not sure what they were doing. They just seemed to be with their entourage. But whereas, like, you know, we had the Monday Steakhouse shooting with with the baby's entourage, and then we have this Pooh Shiesty thing. Mm-hmm. I think there's definitely a balance in between, like, there's rappers doing ignorant shit versus we have an overly punitive justice system.
Yeah.
And, like, a mandatory minimum for Pooh Shiesty. I mean, I have my Pooh Shiesty bias. I think he's, like, pretty good, like, as a new upcoming artist. But 20 years? 20 years? In the same state that George Zimmerman went free? Interesting. I'm just going to say that's interesting.
Like, damn. Apparently, he's facing the same judge he faced like a few months ago.
Same long judge, time listener, first time caller.
He's going to be like, long time no see. What's here today? Look, ankle shooting today. Okay.
Yeah, so it's a really interesting thing with Pooh Shiesty. Of course, we get to, through this, nominate Pooh Shiesty for the Mugshot Awards.
Oh, gorgeous.
Because that's there. But I not just because I have a particular bias towards him and I kind of like his music, but I hope this gets like a little bit kind of reasoned out here. Anyways, NBA Youngboy's lawyer demands a pretrial release after his lawyers went through some evidence about the way in which that NBA Youngboy was arrested. And they found out it was through a police sting operation that was reportedly called Youngboy Never Free Again.
They're not even trying to hide the blatant racism. All of this is fucking hilarious. I'm not going
to
lie.
To be clear, because this is like No Chill Island, we're not laughing because like that's funny. This is a horrible situation.
Oh, no, it's a terrible situation.
Like, the fact they called it
they never called it free again. Like, the audacity of being like, hey, Jim, we got to do some operation. Like, we think that NBA young boy, yeah, I think that's what it is, Jim. Let's call it, what does NBA suffer? Never broke again? Nah, he's going to be never free again.
Yeah, I mean, the LAPD, we also had a story earlier this year where there's a George Floyd Valentine, essentially, that was being passed around. That was something, like a joke about being able to breathe and be mine. Yeah. So, like, LAPD's full of a...
It's pretty shitty.
Let's say LAPD's full of a Tuesday night at the Comedy Cellar kind of guys.
Yeah.
Who also have guns and issues from when they were high school bullies. But, yeah, like... And this is not in any defense of NBA Youngboy. This is just my same sort of 50-50. I think there's a line between these rappers do ignorant shit and our criminal justice system is overly punitive.
My favorite thing is how many guys they got onto their... how many people got onto theirs. So several FBI agents, 3 LAPD vehicles, 11 uniformed and plainclothes LAPD officers, a task force officer, and a ghetto bird were all on the scene at the time of his initial arrest. Y'all are so, LAPD is so afraid of black people that they send out a whole fucking force, a whole battalion out there just to go to, exactly.
Yeah.
Damn. Never free again's fucking hilarious, though.
Like, it's sort of the audacity that they would just, like, call it, hey, you know what'd be funny? If we put another black person in jail. LAPD, kill yourselves. I'm happy to say that.
Oh, man, lost.
Previously on Culture.
So
we last left the Migos on Poor Island.
So there was this one first Migo Offset in April 2019. He got the TMZ Employee of the Month because will Cardi B accept him back into his life for after cheating for the 15th time and to go in the whole little bitch route of going on stage, getting flowers. I'm sorry, Cardi, take me back. And somehow she's saying, no, we're getting divorced. But then playing an Uno reverse card and then bringing him back into her life because
that's
why?
A weird thing. Offset was basically the... wearing the pants in his own relationship with Cardi B just fucking slaying all the entire year. Meanwhile, TMZ was getting all their clicks as they could, getting photos of Offset breaking iPhone 6s in Targets while getting diapers. So he's been having a good time. Meanwhile, Quavo and his relationship with Sweetie seemed to be off to a good start. And then they started realizing that elevators were a point of contention.
There's elevators parts 1 and 2 into this story. So he got caught in 4K, dragging her by the goddamn hair and yanking her down, yanking her into the elevator, saying, you're going to come with me, you little bitch, and get in here, and then goes up into the elevator. And then she releases a diss album on there, and the diss album's pretty shitty and all of that. So.
Yeah, but there's also the thing where, like, Quavo and Saweetie's breakup was pretty public. There was this whole thing where Saweetie had caught Quavo cheating, City Boys up again, and then Quavo then responded to Sweetie saying that I thought you were loyal and I expected better of you than to break up with me because I cheated on you. I expected better of you. Like, let's all go our separate ways.
God, I hate males.
And then Takeoff, the third Migo, what was he been up to? Rape charges. They since we've reported on the rape charges of Takeoff, they were dismissed in L.A. County Court because of a lack of evidence. Because we've talked about rape cases. There's a lot of times where it's hard to get evidence on these things. It doesn't mean they happened or didn't happen, more or less. But that's what the Migos have been up to. But that means we come after a while. Culture 2 came out pretty quickly after Culture 1 because Migos had done some mixtapes after a while. Then Culture 1 is when Migos had really gotten their pop trap kind of set deal kind of thing down to a science. They were like really properly good at it. Then the world met Culture 2, and that was an hour and 48 minutes of like way too much.
Way too much. You did have some decent tracks like BBO is hilarious with 21.
You really hated that song at the end.
I hated it.
In the
I
review, and then it grew on you.
And it grew on me, exactly. Yeah. Because now I'm like, I can understand it, but the rest of the album is just...
I mean, you have the bass blasting Walk It, Talk It.
Never forget Justin Speakers, RIP.
You have
Narcos. You have,
and basically the idea with like Migos doing a pop trap album and like bringing that to the forefront in like a way that was big for that time is that if you throw 20 trap songs at a wall in the mid 2010s, like 5 or 10 of them are gonna stick. They don't have to be good. Of course, none of them are good. It's just kind of statistics at a certain point. So the challenge for Culture 3 is, are they going to make good trap music? Are they going to push anything forward? Are they going to do it?
And Culture 3 is 19 songs, an hour and 15 minutes long.
And that whole preamble is to tell you no.
Absolutely not.
Why did you expect them to?
Do you expect anything? But you expect anything less from Culture 3 to suck? If you did not, then you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah. Before we get into ripping this a new asshole, because I did write down my notes about Culture 3. It manages to be both not bad and worse. In the sense that, you know, this is Quality Control and Motown Records. So, you know, the adults are in the room now. But this actually means that, like, you know, this is pop trap. Trap has moved and progressed a little bit, thankfully, over the past couple years. And so instead of, like, the unnecessarily overproduction with, like, snares and flips all the way over here, you get a little bit of pared back conservatism, if you will, in the production, which I think allows that part of it to shine a little bit more. I think I always thought the beats that were produced for Migos were generally pretty good, and you like do a lot of work with them, which is great because the beats are definitely pulling the weight on a lot of these tracks. But then you get into the lyrics and it's just the same shit.
It's literally the same thing over and over and over again for the past 5 years. And it's pretty shit. I just won't forget. So I did a live listen in with Dan so he could see my reactions while I was on headphones playing Xbox with the We Made It guys of how bad it was. Avalanche starts off of just, I'm like, why? Why does it start off like this? You're already making me mad by just getting into it of just, well, it's definitely Amigos record.
Yeah. You start with, you really start off the album with Aubrey and the Three Migos, as of course it makes any sense to do. And it's an interesting refrain chorus thing that Drake has because perhaps not watching, maybe he's been watching too much of Kanye and Kim Kardashian's reality show and not a lot of the Migos reality show recently. I think the Migos one's a lot more entertaining, but whatever you want to do when you're watching Bravo TV. But the chorus for Drake is interesting because it's about, you know, Drake and the Migos having their way, which is interesting considering what they're rapping about.
Yes.
Their relationship with women, but no, it's okay. I'm having my way. Said I ain't having his way. Quay, I ain't having his way. And like the third me go out. Take. What? Hey. Yeah. Now that I'm picking it through, I just ain't fell in love cause I'm way too awake. And she tried fucking a rapper to break up my heart, but my heart doesn't break. Soon as I link with these niggas, they feelings are written all over their face. What? Quay out here having his way. Sat out here having his way. And like the third Migo I take. Like the third Migo I take. Take off. Like the third Migo I take. You know, like taking people, like the rape charges. Interesting. Nice choice, but we'll move on.
I like
on.
To call Have an Hour Away the Rape, so the official song. The official, hold on, the Audio Face nominated. So, like, what's rapey about that award? That's definitely, Have an Hour Away is definitely nominated for that. Because yeah, we still keep that award because it's a hilarious name for an award.
Because it's a Pharrell quote, because Pharrell took a long time to realize how bad Blurred Lines was.
It took him a decade to realize that, because males. And also, Drake sounds like a bitch on the track. Like, honestly, his flow, everything, it just sounds like somebody squeezing his balls, maybe, or something. I don't know. Maybe it's because he watched the Toronto Maple Leafs get ass-fucked in the brain by Montreal, and he's just like, oh my god, we lost again. Fuck, I guess I gotta go, amigos. Let's talk about rape.
Drake hasn't really had any new or good flows in decade plus, so like it's an unusual snoozer. Straightening is a song that makes absolutely no sense to me whatsoever. Like, fundamentally, like I get if it's about straightening beef, but like the chorus is ain't nothing straightening but straightening, and I'm just like, are y'all talking about Jerry curls? Like, what the fuck are we at now? Like, where are we? Where are you taking us, Offset? Kendall, where are we going, Kendall? Speaking of Offset's government name, we get to type shit with Cardi B, which must have been a really interesting agreement that we came to.
Oh my god.
And you actually liked type shit with Cardi B.
I thought it was, listening to it now, it's just like, it's whatever now. Like, when I first listened to it, I think because of how shit the three songs before it were, I got to it, I was like, okay, this is a song I could listen to.
Yeah.
It's just the same trap beat that they've used for like 6 years onto, and Cardi B's part is okay, but.
Yeah, Migos has a way, quite a lot like the dude who won't stop talking to you at the nightclub. They have a way of wearing you down to the point where you eventually say yes. Is eventually enough Migos songs are so bad, you hear one, you're like, okay, fine. There you go.
Yeah,
that's exactly. Kind of Migos' modus operandi.
But just the thing that they just keep doing all this stupid, like, hey, take off, blah, blah, blah. They haven't learned.
Yeah, the features here are most of the saving grace, because at least in Culture 2, some of the songs, like, they were on their own, doing their own thing, were pretty passable and, like, all right on their own. Mm. But here, the songs where they aren't doing features are just so snoozer. So boring. Malibu with Polo G, I can really barely listen to, if I'm being honest. I'll give Migos one. Vaccine is just, like, tragic. It's just
Vaccine
so hilarious.
Is one of my favorite tracks of the year for how hilariously bad it is.
Yeah.
It is the best thing ever.
Pop out. What's up? We making money in quarantine. Dirt in my stick and my wool clean. It's a blue Benjamin's vaccine. Need to bounce back now on taxing. Fuck up the trap, we go tag team. Talk on FaceTime, it's no texting. Holding a fire, who gon' press me? Big way. We scrape. She do the white like it's Colgate. She still go and get it in four ways. When I'm in my city, I feel safe. Nigga, I'm bigger than Bill Gates. We chase a billion and get paid. Except for we moving with AKs. These niggas dummies, we make plays.
It's Buddha Bless who did the production for it.
Buddha
and I'm trying to remember, like, what is the like flute part behind it, because it's a classical song. It's like a classical song. It's like very like
It almost sounds like a fucking, they took a RuneScape beat and then mixed that, put it onto a track about COVID. It's like, what?
But like it's the da 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 da.
Yeah.
Like that's a real song. I don't know exactly like what measure that is or like what movement. But that's flipped in a really interesting way production.
That's from the Nutcracker.
Right. But like it's flipped in a really interesting way for this song. So I'll give Buddha Bless that credit in that sense. Which is to say, like, the production on this album is good, but the rest of it's so bad. But Casa featuring Future, like, it's the only we're in an era of Future where like he just absolutely doesn't care. Like not trying. Like he had that song, one song, Superstars, on a couple albums ago, where it's just like, everybody wanna be a superstar. And it's just really
like
terrible.
Solitary Scissor, you could get the flu foo.
It's just so terrible. It's so terrible. What's next? Like, it's at this point,
Roadrunner, whatever. And then my favorite worst song of the year, so far. I'll get to my other favorite when we'll get to the next album. Okay. What You See featuring Justin Bieber is one of the worst things I've ever had to sit through and listen to on audio face because of how awful it is.
I'ma plant this seed, 'cause I want you to grow with me. Let's grow. If I don't see you in my dreams, I won't ever go to sleep. In my right mind, she showed the right.
It sounds like you mixed a shitty Justin Bieber track.
Which they did.
Of him trying to be black again. I don't know what phase of Justin Bieber's life it is, of him trying to be Canadian or black or like this or that.
Justin Bieber's young boy never black again. And every time he does a song with like a black artist, he's just like really trying to get it back. But he's never gonna be black.
But
again.
Then it's just bad. I can't even explain.
Because Migos Trap and B, Migos, like I remember the song Moving Too Fast from Culture 2. That was like a Migos Trap and B kind of thing. That was like not great, but still like a little bit better effort than this, which is just like, I mean, it's sad. It's like the official soundtrack of a man who's down bad. It's just a song. It's really horrible. It's really pathetic. Jane is bad. Antisocial with Juice WRLD. You take a Juice WRLD sample where he's like rapping about drugs, and then you like, never mind the fact that he died of a drug overdose. And Migos is like, oh, I take your rapping about drugs. Let's quadruple down on that and continue rapping about
more
drugs.
And then just go about more drugs and how awesome it is, blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, Juice WRLD is going in the plane and dying and fucking foaming at the mouth. And Migos are like, ooh, he's foaming at the mouth. Let's make more drug songs about it. Yeah, get the drugs, dude. Get the beat, the drugs. Yeah, boy.
Perks, perks, perks. Like, it's just lit. Like, I don't get, like, I don't get how we're like, Mac Miller's death was so bad and so tragic, and every post about
Lil
that was like,
Lil
everyone
just like, there's so many, fucking people have been dying from, like, they've been dropping left and right from drugs.
And then all of Juice WRLD's posthumous songs are like,
are about
I
drugs.
Have depression and I'm doing drugs to do it. And everyone dancing around, and everyone's doing, like, party songs, right? Like,
people fucking to it, they're going around, they're smoking to this and that. Like, don't you realize?
Self-awareness.
Did anybody want to help this guy, help anybody? You know what? Let's just all die from drugs. Fuck
no, let's just make the song, let's make the battle, let's continue collecting the money. It's awesome. I aim to go back because there's like a record-breaking levels of like again, like City Boys up 5 points, because there's a lyric in Having Our Way where basically Quavo talks about repossessing Saweetie's car after the breakup.
It's like that one dude who paid child support and with 80,000 pennies and dumped it out the fucking door.
Yeah.
Deadbeat dads.
Yeah, because the lyric was, she had her way, now she out of a Bentley. It's just like, what a piece of shit. Anyways, the album itself, so the last like song of note, like there's Need It with Young Boy Never Free Again, whoops, at the very end. But there's also Light It Up with Pop Smoke, which is like...
Posthumous Pop.
Every Pop Smoke song I've had to complain about this the same way, where it all does the same sort of like half grimed thing beat to make Pop Smoke's like rhymes work. But then every other artist has to jump on there and try to do something they're not. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
So Migos hopping around trying to do their like triplet flow trade off thing.
It doesn't. On this thing. It like, just doesn't just, work.
They're just cut up by this beat. It doesn't work out. I didn't expect to have this many thoughts about Culture 3, but it's. And a lot of, like, production-wise, it's better. And it's more ambitious. And I think the songs that are, like, hits off of this are improvements off of the songs that were hits off of the last one. But as a full project, it's still not good.
It's still pretty dog shit. And they are horrible humans.
Yeah. Horrendously overrated. Just, like, bad as people. And it's also...
Stop making stupid people famous.
Yeah, we forgot to also mention that they're solo projects. They released solo projects, too.
They were all
terrible. Takeoff is like
Quavo's album's one of my least favorite things I've ever had to do.
Yeah, Quavo Huncho was awful. Offset Father of Four was amazing. Because he's probably fathered more and he's not paying child support because he's a bitch. And then yeah, Takeoff has like actual flows and like the Rocket thing was sort of like cool Kanye beats, whatever, but like it's just none of the Migos can hold their own album on their own. So it's kind of just no point. This is an arbitrary scale audio phase because we can still do these building materials. This is my lead because this is just like dumbs you down. You can't have it in your water.
This is asbestos because no matter what, whenever you get asbestos, you have to call somebody to go out and get rid of it every time because you can't live with asbestos or you can't live with Migos. You have to call somebody to get them out of your life.
Yeah, it's like a cancer in Monsters, Inc. Like you have to like shut down the whole factory just like
speaking of cancers.
Not
a little dictator, Kim Jong-un. he describes K-pop as a vicious cancer because he's trying to crack down against South Korean pop culture because he's jealous of South Korea. Like, wait, they're not starving their people while I get to be fat and bloated on this thingy and literally shoot miniguns at people and starve my population, but they get to eat. Not allowed.
Right. It's just one of those weird things. You get a couple weird things happening and coming out of North Korea every once in a while. And yeah, it just seems that Kim Jong-un doesn't like the K-pop music at all. That's kind of funny.
Apparently.
I wonder what music does he like? I mean, he's friends with Dennis Rodman, so maybe he likes rap. I'd love to ask Kim Jong-un.
I want Dennis Rodman to come over and play Light It Up and just start dancing with fucking Kim Jong-un.
I wonder if Kim Jong-un's into Migos.
I could see it.
I can see him being into Having Our Way.
Oh, God. That's a rabbit hole I'm not going to go down right now.
Moving on. Tom McDonald, an investigation. So Tom McDonald is a base level. Tom McDonald is a musical artist who has recently found his way into the press by releasing a lot of songs that are proudly, abashedly anti-social justice warrior, anti-PC culture. You know, the usual thing where, like, right-wingers try to be, like, shock jocks and edgy by, you know, like, making fun of gay people or something like that. You know, the usual.
Fucking cool, bud.
But He released a song called No, let's call it a song. He released it called No More Snowflakes. It probably isn't safe to encourage immigration. Just saying, all the contradictions are embarrassing. You know who hates America the most? Americans. Trigger warnings used to be on TV for seizures, and now they're everywhere to protect millennials' feelings. He, she, his, him, hers, them, they. Screw a pronoun, cause everyone's a retard these days. I hear him preaching at the protest that hatred's the problem, but hating straight men, white folks, and Christians is common. Coca-Cola telling people they should be less white. They preach intolerance, but if you disagree, they fight. There's a race war here, elections based on fear. Black lives only matter once every 4 years. Soldiers died for this country, and every one of us benefits. Give welfare to the bums and forget about the veterans. Black folks and white folks divided by the news, but we are all the same. We are red, white, and blue. Ashamed to be American? Okay, that's cool. Cause honestly, we are all ashamed of you too. Y'all are so fake. Oh no. And it has all these other different like refrains and beats and all these other different marks about, you know, trying to be an edgelord all the time. You know, like, I guess these lyrics are really cool if you're 14 years old in high school and you're jealous the cheerleaders won't go out with you because you talk about Ben Shapiro too much. But, like, whatever. That's fine. Speaking of Ben Shapiro, his website, The Daily Wire, gave him this full-out, like, editorial thing where they're like, he's cutting edge, he's avant-garde, he's, like, trending so nicely, he's, like, record-breaking artist, he's, like, topping all these charts. But I'm like, wait a minute. Who the fuck is Tom McDonald?
Who the fuck is Tom McDonald? Who is this? Who, we've never heard of him, nothing out. You just try to prop something that you like and enjoy because somebody didn't lick your left ball in high school.
Yeah, like it's very obvious that Ben Shapiro was not bullied enough in high school. This is what happens. But you do a little bit more of digging into Tom McDonald and you realize that he has some extremely organic press. And by that, I mean, anytime you Google Tom McDonald, you get a bunch of PR newswires from websites that release press releases for people. So press releases are just when a company wants to tell the public exactly what they want to say on their terms. No journalist going, well, what about this? This doesn't seem right. It's like, no, the company gets to say what they want to. And so you have a number of self-released press releases that are filling the internet with Tom McDonald that are kind of basically to hype him up. For example, one is called Ready to Break the Internet Again, Tom McDonald Trolls Snowflakes with Controversial New Single and Music Video. You see, there's a bunch of buzzwords in there.
Of course.
It's like control, just, snowflakes.
It's just so boring. It's hilarious.
Let me tell you how you can tell this is not written by anyone who is like either in touch with pop culture or like under
or
the
in
age
fucking
of
music.
Or under the age of 25. Los Angeles PR Newswire, June 4th, 2021. Even as summer gets ready to heat up, Tom McDonald is as ice cold as ever. The independent rapper, internet-breaking firebrand, and counterculture force of nature unleashes his new single and music video entitled Snowflakes. On the track, clean guitar and keys glide above with a tense beat as he serves up the kind of bars the phrase trigger warning was made for. As usual, he takes no prisoners. Hypersensitivity and hypocrisy fall square into his verbal crosshairs as he rails, quote, blaming capitalism like that's the reason things are tough, while you tweet from an iPhone and sip on a Starbucks. Roasted!
These people never get out of the mentality of being a seventh grade, like, awkward dude who doesn't know what to do with his penis.
Can I note just one last really important thing here?
Yeah.
Tom McDonald, who has quite a lot of really well thought out opinions about American culture, is a goddamn Canadian.
Yep.
All right. So we have Ben Shapiro's Daily Wire, big old American conservative freedom to you and me, propping up a Canadian independent musician who's, I didn't get to this part because I did more investigating. He spent $100,000 on an NFT from Eminem, just so he could rap over one of his beats, telling Eminem, oh, you're one of my idols, you're one of my icons, you're so great, I love what you do.
Here's 100 grand so I can rap on your beat.
Hey, what can I say? White recognize white.
You're from Michigan, I'm from Canada, you know, it's a close relationship, you know?
The sad thing is, and I am going to dunk on someone because they absolutely deserve this. There was someone at Hip Hop DX who legitimately, oh, Brandon Caldwell, who is a complete idiot who shouldn't be a musical reporter, who needs to stop what they're doing right now, who was baited into actually writing an article about this guy. This guy's desperate. All he's doing is PR news articles about himself, and you do a write-up of him because he's desperate and trying to get attention. He's not controversial. He's not, like, triggering anyone because no one knows who the fuck he is.
And nobody gives a fuck. Except random conservative dweebs on the internet.
Yeah. The only reason I went this far into it is because on PowerPoint, in my political world, in my day job, I do a lot of things where I'm, like, analyzing where do, like, what are the words that conservatives are saying, and are any of them real? Down to how they even market and brand themselves. And the answer is no. So, what's the word for a Canadian who tries so hard to be an American they check their dignity at the border? I don't know, Justin Bieber?
Drake?
The Toronto Maple Leafs?
The inverse Austin Matthews? Who else? Steven Crowder?
Yeah. Speaking of crackers getting their ass beat, Aaron Carter.
Aaron Carter got dicked by a Missouri snake in a celebrity boxing match.
Aaron Carter got his magnetic poles reversed by Lamar Odom.
Lamar Odom didn't even have to try. Like, he just, like, put the tip in, and the girl's like, that's too big for me, dog, and just, like...
Lamar Odom's boxing gloves were like heat-seeking missiles following Aaron Carter's, like, weak toothpick body around the ring.
There he got,
as he was like...
He got some sidewinder ones and aim twos in his fucking wrist and just boom, boom. And Aaron Carter's trying to spin around and going around. And even the announcer's like, who the fuck spins in a boxing match? Because Aaron Carter's
fucking twisting like a ballerina trying to avoid these shots. I'm like, listen, Lamar Odom hasn't been this on his games since he was playing for the Lakers and actually worth a damn. Like, I could watch videos of Lamar Odom kicking the shit out of dumbass bitch Aaron Carter for so long.
I just wish Aaron Carter had the dignity to at least, like, get fully knocked out and, like, collapse on stage, mouth reverberating, just be like, and get an aneurysm while in the boxing match just by a Lamar Odom left hook.
I want an Aaron Carter-Jake Paul fight called the Sprouts Invitational.
I'm so down. I'm so down. I want Vince Staples to commentate on it. 100%.
Vince Staples and Kenny Beats do announcing.
Yes. Everything.
Yeah, it's just fucking garbage. But not as garbage as our last album review of this fine episode. We have Jordy by Maroon 5 Deluxe. It's 14 songs, 43 minutes long. And this is the second Maroon 5 album we reviewed on Audioface. The first being Red Pill Blues. An album that I said some pretty choice things about.
This is the music that 35-year-old gentrifiers with beards are going to be, like, gently nudging their naughty bits up against each other as they're rocking back and forth at this, like, barely sold-out concert while Maroon 5 play their, like, shitty half-broken Telecaster to a crowd of, like, 40-somethings who, like, have no money in savings, are still renting and still relying on their parents for money, like reminiscing about the good times they had in college back when they were listening to Maroon 5 and everything was easy before they got pregnant. That's the music. That's like, that's what this album is for. It's stuck in the past.
And I don't regret a single thing I said about hipsters there and their sexual proclivities and how boring their lives are. Nevertheless, we go into Maroon 5's album here and you get a lot of features, and we'll get to the features here in a moment. But, Sean, what did you think?
Okay, so you know how in Audioface 3 years ago we reviewed Mania by Fall Out Boy, and I had to, and I couldn't, like, put my headphone on because of how bad it was?
Yeah.
Jesus Take the Wheel, because Jordy is worse than Mania the Fall Out Boy. This yeah. is my now, my collection of worst records, right? You've got, now it is forever, like, etched in stone until Culture 4 comes out. It is, because Culture 3 was up there. It goes Maroon 5, Jordy, and now Mania by Fall Out Boy. Somebody finally did it. Somebody finally broke the white boy streak and actually made an album that made me so mad I had to rip out my headphones and say, I can't fucking listen to this, but I do it for the people so you can get, so I can get bleeped and call. Everybody in Maroon 5, all of them, Adam Levine, tattooed, whack ass, all honkies. It is utterly garbage. Like, they tried a bunch of white dudes in fucking pants that are eight sizes too small for them, almost looked like Mumford and Sons muffin tops asses. They try to make a fucking trap album because Whitey doesn't know what to do with their lives anymore and tries to be hip.
First of all, I legitimately, in my brain, think of Maroon 5 and Fall Out Boy as the same band.
So, I mean, that's the reason collectively,
reason I think maybe we thought that we reviewed two or three or more of their albums.
Probably.
It's just starting to, like, blend together into one. But, like, Maroon 5's issue, which is the same issue I had in their previous album, which is, like, why I don't have much to say about the album itself substantively, is that Maroon 5 is stuck making 2000s pop alternative. And they're like, this is great. This is music that people like listening to. Let's keep making more of this. And they just, like, get some new art. They got some Megan Thee Stallion. They got her. They got Bantu. They've got...
They butchered Stevie Nicks. They did my girl like that. Like, goddamn. They made her voice all, like, layered and shitty. And, like, Stevie Nicks is a fucking amazing voice. Even she's still in her 70s and she's still slaying dick. Like, she's up there, like, just destroying it. And they just fuck up her whole part and put, like, Adam Levine's stupid voice on top of it and make it to sound horrible. I'm like, why?
Yeah.
Ah, damn it. I hate music. Fuck this thing.
Like, it's bland. It's generic. It's pathetic. You've heard all these, like, songs and all these variations in many ways before. It's just uninspired, dull, like, country music is like BDSM in comparison to this. This is some of the most boring shit.
It also sounds like all the trap beats they have sound like they just ripped it from every YouTuber in existence of, like, random beats that, like, some random YouTuber in the UK puts in their songs or in their videos because they think, like, the hip youths will like it.
No, this is like royalty-free drone music.
Yeah.
Trap beats, essentially.
Yeah.
Again, sonically, I can't really talk about many of the songs. You talked about how Remedy was butchered. I mean, One Light, I guess, is kind of okay because it's the most, like, no, sonically different. No, it's fucking dick. But, like, it's one of the only songs on the album that sounds, like, a little bit different than this.
Well, the best thing. Literally, this album just made my phone freeze. So, huh? This album just made my phone freeze. That's so bad. How bad it is. It, like, broke my Pixel.
It's, everything is bad. Like, hers feature is garbage. And so, I didn't have much to say on this album. I warned Sean in the beginning I wouldn't have much to review on this. But I figured, while I have your time here, I'm going to talk a little bit about being able to take whole posthumous album.
Because they did a song with Juice WRLD, because everybody, this is the world is Juice now.
And they did Memories Remix with Maroon 5, Nipsey Hussle, late Nipsey Hussle, and YG, Vanilla Ice Award winning YG together. And it's this, like, toast to the memories, all our friends are great, let's get in this, like, poorly mixed audio from Nipsey Hussle in here in a song that doesn't really make sense in the context of Maroon 5. Let's get YG in here because, what the fuck, he's black too, right? The song will sound nice. He's got two rappers on there. It's just so slapdash together. The Juice WRLD Maroon 5 thing, again, Juice WRLD is still kind of on his druggy thing. Maroon 5's on his, like, trying to tip into that. There's no sort of recognition for the artist and what they went through, what led up to them dying. And maybe some respect for that in the music. We've done a lot of posthumous records and a lot of posthumous albums for, like, a long time now on this podcast. And we've gotten to see that every single Pop Smoke posthumous song that comes out, like on the Migos album that we just reviewed, is just an iteration and a copy of what we heard of Pop Smoke in that one time before he blew up. It sucks we didn't get to hear what he would have sounded like making album number two, but, like, it's not like any of the producers even want to think about what that would have sounded like because they're all making the same fucking beat. And then on Juice WRLD, I've gotten to the thing again where it's like it's complete disregard of the fact that he died of a drug overdose, and we're still making songs that don't address it, don't look toward it, don't think about it in any sort of way. But what is the point of having all of these leftover lyrics just like hanging around from these people who are no longer alive if all you're gonna do is throw them into shitty pop songs and have like
and the just people destroy them for no reason and yeah, this disregarded
it's a complete
heap hole.
Bastardization of their legacy. It like makes me upset. It makes me like angry. It like it frustrates. It's also like a warning to like artists who are out right now. And if you're like a minimum artist, like have a plan for what happens after you die with your music.
You actually have, you really have to.
Because basically if you don't, it will be fucked up. It will be fundamentally like ruined.
Destroyed. And then your legacy will be ruined by Maroon 5.
Yeah. Or like some other artist who like doesn't really care about you or what you stood for. They just think they can make a quick buck off the fact that you died. Maroon 5 as a band, as a musical project needs to die.
Just to stop. No more. Ever.
Yeah. Arbitrary scale. Maroon 5 is like inhaling chloroprene.
Maroon 5 is mercury.
Formaldehyde.
Formaldehyde's pretty good.
Yeah.
Maroon 5 is mercury. Because you get that thing, it's you're gone. You're gone, skis. You're done. You're dead. Yeah.
I need some mercury after hearing that shit. Oh my god.
So speaking about white people and doing shit they shouldn't do.
Fucking Adam Levine, that NBC ass, like, never mind. I'm gonna stop before I.
Because really this one's better. Zach, Kid Rock, you know. I don't know what to say, like, noted something. I'm just because, all right, Kid Rock.
Kid Rock, America's favorite inbred rocker.
There we go. He used a homophobic slur to address a video of him using a homophobic slur because he's just gonna triple down on it. Quadruple down on it.
Yeah. The singer was caught on camera a fast Saturday at Fish Lips Bar and Grill in Smithville, Tennessee, ranting about you fucking F-words for gay people with your phones out. he said again, posting under the official Kid Rock Twitter account under his real name, Bob Ritchie, and referring to Kid Rock in the third person. One of my favorite things white people do before they're about to go off is refer to themselves in the third person. He said, quote, if Kid Rock using the word faggot offends you, good chance you are one. Either way, I know he has a lot of love for his gay friends, and I will have a talk with him. Have a nice day. Signed, Bob Ritchie.
Oh, man. Beautiful.
Like,
I hope Kid Rock gets some solid, like, 13-incher into his rectum and enjoys it.
I mean, like, what's most likely...
And I hope... The guy on top of him is stroking his hair and calling him like a loving f- when he's doing it.
And I hope it's Morgan Wallen. Here, kid, I got the douche just like you love it. No, I'll leave that there because I just would have said worse.
Because there's two more that I really want to get into.
Noel Gallagher. Calls Prince Harry a fucking woke snowflake because I'm so over it. I'm so tired of steel reserve skull British men and their inbred poor genes looking like Jeremy Clarkson's ass when they move their lips having their opinions on young people or woke culture, whatever the hell they want to talk about. Noel Gallagher stopped being relevant in the 1990s when Damon Albarn basically lubed up his balls and teabagged them all over Oasis and their pathetic career. Noel Gallagher should do himself a favor, jump off of the Tower Bridge in London and fuck himself while Nigel Farage masturbates. I wish him and Morrissey would hold hands and skit their skulls together until they die and end up being mowed over by the new, whatever they have to do with all those banks that are moving out of the city of London because Brexit's fucking up the entire country. But I want them to be some of those... I want Noel Gallagher and Morrissey to die as one of those gay skeletons that gets discovered as like lovers when they're building a new tower block on the West End. It's like, look at these two idiots. They were talentless, no one likes them, and they're holding hands just as they would have wanted to.
And this is the story that's going to end the show for eternity.
Yeah, and so we'd like to end Audio Face forever on a fun note. Talk about Little Loaded. And now... much like Lil Loaded, Audio Face is over. Lil Loaded, we began by talking about the funniest mugshot we'd ever gotten, the fastest mugshot for the Audio Face Awards this year, because he had killed his friend and video recorded it and then went to jail because he pleaded for first degree murder. Now, he'd gotten out of jail on bond. He was doing all that stuff. And
beautiful.
Oh, God, there was a time I had my hair like that. Don't worry about it. Anyways, according to a police report obtained by TMZ, cops in Cedar Hill, Texas, responded to a call Monday morning from Lil Loaded's mom, who was crying on the front porch, who said his son was dead. Lil Loaded's mom apparently told the police that she had returned home to find her son in the second floor hallway, saying that he was emotional last night, crying and upset about how much he loved his ex-girlfriend.
And then he took a fucking shotgun and shot himself in the stomach.
Yeah.
And this is why... I'll
start and then you can continue and then I'll kind of go on. Lil Loaded's... wasn't his hit song like Block Baby, Sklock Sklitty or whatever?
It was like Sklock Sklitty, Skitty Sklock. Yeah.
And
it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was a pretty bad trap song. He was too far into the game. He literally shot a guy, murdered him in the street. His family was dying and crying and shit. And he videotaped and recorded it. So now the shoe's on the other foot, because he didn't have the dignity to even get shot by a
shoe's on the other foot. Like, he had a bitch outdoing himself because he was crying over a bitch. So that automatically gets you nominated for the little bitch award. Maybe, I don't know. We'll play for the jury later, because you go upset, but you're trying to be this hood rat dude going up and shooting dudes in the street, video recording, and be like, ha ha ha, look at his dead body, and then you go, oh, wake up, back up at me, and meanwhile your mama's on the phone like, oh my God, Lord Jesus, have mercy, my baby! And then it sees you going out, there's blood coming out of your mouth, your fucking nostrils, your earlobes and shit. You didn't even do it the nice way. You could just get some mercury, down that shit, you can get
you didn't even do it the Juice World way, where it's really ugly on the inside, but all your mom sees is the foaming at the mouth, which is fine. It just looks like you choked on Tic Tacs. It's no problem.
Exactly. You just have some orange Tic Tacs that were expired from 1992 that you just choked on. You know, it's all any good. No. Your mom has to go up and clean up your black ass all over the fucking floor. Just blood everywhere. Bleep that. Just mop it up.
Like, how does it feel to kill yourself over the first girl to give you a hand job? That's the most pathetic fucking excuse for a life ever. Like, honestly, you should have killed yourself at age 14 if we knew how that was going to end.
You should have killed yourself before you killed the dude in the street, so that way you at least saved a life, you know? Do yourself a favor. Have a negative KD ratio. You can't be even. It's not... This world is not fair. That Lil Loaded has an even KD spread. He should be at least -1.
At least Lil Loaded killed himself. It saves the government the welfare money. It's just so,
solid.
I think it is fucking hilarious that this murderer killed himself, and I just think that it's hilarious that you did it over a we talk a lot about men being trash, but
it's no epiphany of it.
No woman is worth killing yourself over. Women,
nobody's worth killing yourself over.
No woman is barely worth the fight is. Let alone killing yourself over.
Take that.
Been a barely worth a matinee theater showing. I don't get why.
If you want excitement, take your ass to the movies. Why did you put a fucking 12 gauge in your belly button, pull the trigger? That shit probably jumped up and broke your jaw at the same time. So you got teeth everywhere. You got guts spilling out.
Just shoot himself in the balls, make himself a woman, and he can fuck himself for the rest of eternity? Then exactly. He can be his friend in jail.
So you got 8 balls, 3 cocks, different ways, one up the ass, one here, and you're just doing it that way instead of, letting your mom have to clean them up the mess.
Flossing your intintestines with a prison guy's dick, just going in and out.
Exactly. It would have been better, if you killed your guy actually properly, the justice system probably got you arrested and in jail for life, and you find a boyfriend in there instead while he fucks you while you drop the soap 85 times. You're like, oh my God, I like males instead. You're not going to cry and kill yourself.
Lil Loaded could have gone out like a gangster. He could have gone out fighting in the ops in the streets. He could have gone out fighting in the mill. He might as well have just gone. Lil Loaded would have been the most pathetic IDF soldier ever, because he would have been Lil Loaded one of the niggas you couldn't let in a co-ed military, because he'd be like, no, this little ball girl over here made some flowers for me, and then I got her a little car, but this ball girl said, no, I like the army better, and this other guy's much stronger anyways, so he full metal jacketed himself in the urinal.
But at least But at least Private Pyle got some balls and does it in like, and does everything in formation. Lil Loda would have like somehow like fucked it up and then killed himself.
Lil Loaded Private Pyle.
Lil Loaded unloaded himself. So, and he did the world of justice. So at least got the even KD now.
Stacks no paper, gets no hose, shot himself. Over wasted. A 20-year-old. Oh my
over
God.
Like, kill yourself again. Kill yourself again. Do it.
XXXTentacion's up in hell like, yo, you
God. Exactly. They go down and meanwhile, XXXTentacion is still, he's in hell and is like permanently stuck in his IA like.
Lil Loaded got forever. Forked in the heart.
And he comes down and then fucking Lil Loaded comes up next to him. And he's like, what could I have done different, XX? And he goes, and then that's out of your face, and I'm not going to plug face. It. Never don't listen to us again, please, that's God. Right. Peter,
that was bad.
Dan, for the love of God, fine tooth comb. Fuck me.
There's going to be like whole blocks in this episode I'm taking out. we're done. Next week, King Gizzard and the Wizard Lizard. Goodbye. House said, why them niggas switch? So many times a nigga could have been a lick. I'ma wear a nigga up, leave his whole body drink. If Audio Face is this out this episode, I may never go harder than I do in the story. This might be like the end of, like we might say that raunchy Audio Face ended with this episode, because like everything else might be like a bump.
Everything
board.
Might be is gonna be not as bad as this. Walk in the party, I just bought a stick. Got a new Glock to go with my new fit. Niggas keep talking, I'm